right center net.
Flame bench, there's all kinds of excitement going on there.
Scores! Roll the highlight reel. 6-0 Flames.
You can't put it in the wind column.
Yeah, baby, yeah, baby, yeah, baby.
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, let's get things going this hour. It is Wednesday, October 23rd. And we're underway on Flames Talk with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. It's Pat Steinberg on the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Treat yourself with up to $500 in savings of fire-resistant gun safes. Explore the full line of safes at CalgaryLockAndSafe.com. Hello, Vix.
Hello, Patrick. How are we doing on this fine Wednesday?
Very good. Very good. And you can get Flames Talk on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. Text line's open at 960-960 all hour long if you want to chime in. How good have Rasmus Anderson and Mackenzie Weegar been to start the season? Both have 3 goals. Both playing a ton of minutes. Anderson leads the team with 8 points in 6 games. Here's my overarching question for the hour, my friend. Where would the Flames be without Weegar and Anderson to start the season? Where would this team be if those guys weren't playing at the level they've played at right now? I feel pretty confident in saying they would not be 5-0-1, which is what they are right now.
Well, you stole my answer. I mean, I know it's the layup, the empty netter, the tap in, whatever, but those two have been the absolute backbone of this team, and it's no coincidence that the remaining players on the roster, to whatever degree you want to look at, but to certainly some degree, have followed what Rasmus Anderson and Mackenzie Weegar have put forth as the foundation of the blue line for the Calgary Flames, the undefeated in regulation Calgary Flames.
Yep. Best 6-game start in franchise history, which is what it is. You can say that, you can be totally bought in on that, or you can say that means nothing, but all we've got to go on is 5 wins and 1 overtime loss through 6 games, and they're full marks. If you ask me, they are full-on deserving of where they sit right now at 5-0-1. Not every game has been pristine. As Brad Larson, the assistant coach, said on Flames Talk postgame on Tuesday night, like, were we fully on it in this game? Nope, don't think we were. But you got to find ways to win games sometimes, and on nights where maybe you don't have it to the same degree. And they did that again against Pittsburgh. Just from a, you know, if we're looking at them individually, Weegar, again, putting everything on net. Right now sits second on the team with 34 shot attempts at all strengths. Only Nazem Kadri has more at 44. So Weegar is about right on pace for his career high 471 shot attempts from last season. 471 for a D-man. Again, only Kadri was higher than he was last year at all strengths. So right, I think he's on pace right now for about 464. So right on about the same level that he was at last year. And then there's Anderson, who leads the team in average time on ice. He's playing the toughest minutes on the team. He's playing at the highest level I've ever seen him play at. And if you listen to this program, you know how highly I think of number 4. And he's playing at a higher level than I've ever seen him play at. His shot is more dangerous than I've ever seen it. He's skating and joining rushes with a confidence that I've never seen. Like, it has been impressive to see that Weegar looks like he is building on his career season from last year, where he scored 20, only guy to ever hit 20 goals and 200 block shots in the same season, courtesy Wes Gilbertson. And you've got Rasmus Anderson, who at the age of 27 is playing the highest level hockey he's ever played. Like, it's been really impressive to see what these two guys have been able to do so far.
First of all, how dare you shout out that third member of Flames Talk when I'm around? That really hurts my feelings.
Family.
Yeah,
we're a
dysfunctional
trio.
Family. Nah, we're all pretty okay, I guess. You don't want to talk Mackenzie Weegar first. Since the start of last season, since you mentioned his career year in 23-24, no defenseman in the NHL has more goals than Mackenzie Weegar. He holds that honor at 23 goals by way of 20 last year, 23 this year, with Roman Josi and Cale Makar. That is pretty elite company to be mentioned in the same breath as those two Norris Trophy winners. And yeah, he's continued it this season. Again, you mentioned he's got 3 goals. He's putting everything on net. The thing I appreciate most is Mackenzie Weegar will be the first to. It's a running punchline at times that he doesn't have the hardest shot on the team.
He talked about it again on Wednesday morning. He threw out a, I just like getting my muffins in there.
But his ability to get pucks through traffic is elite. That individual trait is among the best in the NHL in terms of defensemen and being able to avoid shin pads, being able to avoid bodies up front. And then, of course, you layer in Rasmus Anderson, who's second only to Cale Makar in points this season amongst defensemen with 8. Makar's just been bonkers with 14 points in 7 games, just playing otherworldly in terms of the offensive game. But it's not just offense with Rasmus Anderson either. You mentioned it. He's playing the toughest minutes on the team. He's being asked to carry the load defensively a lot of nights as well when he's on the penalty kill, when he's not 5-on-5. Sprinkle in a little bit of power play time. And yes, his shot, which I would argue is top 4-ish on the team, maybe the best shot amongst defensemen on the team. He's been absolutely everything. He's been, if we want to park the goalies aside because they've split 3-3, to me, Rasmus Anderson has been the most important player for the Calgary Flames so far through 6 games.
Honestly, when both guys are on their game, which they have been to start this year, no doubt, they're both top 20, top 25 defensemen in the NHL for my money. I know if you asked Ras, I would think that he probably would feel like his season wasn't exactly how he wanted it to go last year.
Yeah.
But it was about this time last year or going into the year where you kind of started to see, for good reason, you started to see him land on some of those preseason lists, like best left wingers, best right wingers, best defensemen, and you started to see Rasmus Anderson crack the top 20 and crack the top 15, as he should, and what he's doing right now, there's no doubt he's in that mix, and the same with Mackenzie Weegar. And so it's... When both guys are playing at the level they're at right now, they've got two of the better defensemen in the NHL. What they don't have anymore is the other guys, one of the best shutdown defensemen in the NHL, one of the best skating defensemen in the NHL, in Tanev and Hanifin, respectively. Those guys aren't there anymore, so the depth on the blue line is not the same that it was, but certainly the two veteran holdovers back there have done exactly what they've been asked. And more in Rasmus Anderson and Mackenzie Weegar. I asked Mackenzie about this on Wednesday morning. So the Flames held an off-ice workout at the Dome. The guys who were scratched on Tuesday night all skated at Winsport. Everybody else just did an off-ice workout, probably did a little video at the Dome on Wednesday instead of a full practice. And I asked Mackenzie about the level that Rasmus Anderson's playing at. Gave a great answer on that. And then we kind of took it in a slightly different direction that I think is a really important add-on to this conversation that we're having right now.
It's an elite level right now. You can see it. He's playing with a lot of pace too, but I think he's done a great job leading the way back there every single night when we needed him to step up, you know, score a big goal or make a big play or block a big shot. You know, he's done that for us right now. And, you know, he's I don't know what defenseman, I haven't really looked at the stats, but in the league right now, I don't think anybody's, you know, near where he's at. He's pretty elite right now, and you know, he's got to keep that going for us. We need him.
For you and him, with the guys that left over the last year, kind of the two remaining longtime vets here, mm-hmm. Do you take even a little bit more on your shoulders this year, knowing that you kind of have to lead the way back there?
Yeah, I think for Ras and I as well, we've been waiting for kind of this moment as well, you know, to kind of be the leaders back there. We want that role. And I think we've done a great job so far with the decor. Obviously, everybody's been great from all 6 to 8 of us back there every night. But I think Ras has done a great job at leading, and I think he wants that role. He's waited, you know, a long time, you know, to be have that letter and, you know, to contribute like this. So we like the opportunity that we're getting with that role.
I really, and that last part where he says that, you know, me and Raz, we've been waiting for this moment, waiting for this opportunity. Like, I really wonder how much kind of, and you know, for without a shadow of a doubt, that both Craig Conroy and Ryan Huska, whether it be in the offseason or training camp or both, told these guys, we need you even more. Like, you're all 6 of the core veterans of this team. We know who they are. All 6 of them were kind of given that same message, like, you're it. Like, we are counting on you to be not just the leaders on the ice, not just the leaders off the ice, but we're counting on you to kind of be the tone setters, the trend setters, the culture setters, and we're putting this team on your shoulders. And on the back end, we're putting this on the shoulders of Rasmus Anderson and Mackenzie Weegar. And when you're, I think, and being a former NHLer myself,
did I miss that?
What I think I can relate. Yes, you did. Great career. What I think I can relate to is caring about what you do. That's the only thing that I can relate to. But I think when you care about something and when you care about the people around you, the people that you work for and so on and so forth, like when you care about the job that you do and you get empowered with even more responsibility and the people that matter tell you that, hey, we're putting even more responsibility on your shoulders. Well, when you care, I think you get even more out of people and you get an even higher level out of people. And I don't think it's a coincidence that we're seeing such a high level from both of these guys in a situation where they've been asked to do even more. And they've been told that, you know, you're the face of the Calgary Flames. You're the leader of the Calgary Flames. We're counting on you six and these two in particular on the blue line. We're counting on the two of you to really lead the way for a younger, more developing group of defensemen. I think that's a huge part of what we're seeing from these two guys early on this year.
Well, everything that you just said in detail, and by the way, you can also relate to having to, you know, carry a partner a little bit. I can give you that prop, that sort of credit. But everything you just laid out there is basically Craig Conroy and Ryan Huska challenging those two individuals to rise to another level, maybe a level that either they haven't been to or maybe didn't know they have. And both have just responded through six games against an early sample size. There's going to be ebbs and flows to every season, and everything seems to be going right for the Calgary Flames now. And we'll have to see how they respond when things aren't maybe going as well. But to this point, they have absolutely risen. Rasmus Anderson in particular have risen to that challenge and taken it. Like, when's the last time Rasmus Anderson has played this level? I would argue never. You could make an argument maybe perhaps a couple seasons ago when you mentioned perhaps being disappointed, not you being disappointed, but Rasmus Anderson being disappointed in his last season. But what he's done so far through this season and the contributions he's made offensively, the contributions he's made defensively to the culture and the tone of the locker room, he's absolutely answered that bell, as has Mackenzie Weegar.
Yeah, and asked a little bit, asked Raz that same thing. He came out after Mackenzie came out and the same thing, said, hey, you know, is more responsibility on your shoulders. Mackenzie said, you guys have been waiting for a moment like this. How much have you embraced that opportunity?
You know, I remember when, you know, we had the Geos here and, you know, Dougie and Rhodes and all of those guys. It's the people you looked up to, and you know, both me and him try to set a good example. And you know, if we block shots or if we join the rush or if we hit someone, you know, Weeks is more of a hitter than I am, but we're both pretty good at eating pucks. And you know, if we can do it, all of us can do it. And we're just trying to lead by example. And you know, we're both pretty vocal guys in the room too. And so yeah, it's nice to have that. You know, the confidence and the ability to do it too. And but it's a long season, and you know, it starts with the two of us on the back end. And if we're not doing the job, we can't demand anyone else to do the job either. So it falls back on us. And and I mean, you look at Baller, how good he's been, and Pickles have been really good too. And you know, it's the effect that when your leaders lead and the team wins, you know, we're a dangerous team.
And I honestly think that, you know, going to these six guys and the two of them on the blue line specifically, I think it's exact. And you know, we keep talking about the transparency of Craig Conroy, which I think has been very refreshing. And he said it right from the beginning of the season. We're not looking to trade these veterans. I'm not shopping Nazem Kadri. Yep. I'm not shopping Blake Coleman. Like, no. The complete opposite. Not only are they important now? We see them being important for where we're going in this 3 to 5 year plan. And so that's how you get guys bought in. I go back to how Nazem Kadri looked after scoring that game tying goal on Tuesday night. Like that guy was dialed in. That did not look like an uninvested person to me. Blake Coleman throwing his body around, Rasmus Anderson in the death stares, Mackenzie Weegar. I don't think Mackenzie Weegar has the ability to not be bought in on anything that he does. That's just part of the personality that he is. Like going to these guys and getting that, like, and really selling to them not just the vision for the future, but how they're going to get the Flames from point A to point B, how integral they're going to be. I think he's gone a long way in terms of the attitude and the just overall mindset of this group right now.
Well, listen, this might be a discussion for another date, but we're closing in on it. You can't tell me that Rasmus Anderson isn't firmly on the radar of Sweden for the Four Nations face-off, and Mackenzie Weegar for Canada as well. And that's not just paying lip service to the start. It was a topic on Hockey Night in Canada on Saturday about how Mackenzie Weegar might be positioning himself for a role on Team Canada. You look back to two world championships ago, he helped Canada to gold there and was the best player in the entire tournament. So we're not talking just locally here. These players are going to be recognized nationally and internationally for the efforts, the starts, and the execution that they've had so far in 24-25.
And I also think, you know, Mackenzie Weegar's signed long-term. He's got 6 years after this on his deal. So I don't think that you're 6 years after this? Yeah, 6 years after
six
this.
6 years,
year two, yep. You know, you've got guys who are, he's here for the long-term. Rasmus Anderson's only got 1 year left on his deal after this, though. And, you know, on our roundtable Monday, we talked about Rasmus's future and what that could look like with the Flames. And I think what Craig Conroy and Ryan Huska have done in terms of, you know, really building up these six guys, well, for the youngest of the group and the one guy that is closest to having his contract expire, I think that this approach is a really important way of convincing him or further convincing him. I don't know where Rasmus stands on that. I'll be perfectly honest with you. I don't think it's appropriate to be asking that when he's still got 2 years
this far out. Yeah.
I don't think it's appropriate to bring that up with him right now. You know, that to me is a at the end of the season conversation when he's then got a year left on his contract. That's the first time when I think it's fair to bring up him, whether or not he wants to be here or not. But I don't know where that stands for him right now, but if he is not sold or if he's unsure, well, this approach I think is a great way to convince him to come to the side of re-signing. And if he is sure, well, this is a good way to just further convince him. Again, I think this type of stuff goes a long way with people who care, and I don't think there's any doubt that guys like Weegar and guys like Anderson, that they care about what's going on, and they care about not just the job they're doing, but, you know, the job they're doing and how it relates to the bigger picture in the team.
Yeah, when you're one of the bigger pieces of the puzzle, it's easier to convince a guy. And things are going the way that they have been. Like, let's not forget that the mood, the atmosphere, the vibes, if you will, around this team are, I'm not going to say that word, are really good right now. But by,
you can say immaculate. We're talking about Mackenzie Weegar.
I understand that, but I feel like I don't want it to be overused, and I don't want to have to
never
pay copyright to Mackenzie Weegar for continually using it. But if you are trying to convince a player, in this case Rasmus Anderson, to look at a long-term future with the Calgary Flames, having him as one of that core six, having him as one of the most important pieces, not just on your blue line, but in your dressing room as well, it goes a long way.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. And last thing I'll say, they need these two guys to remain this high level all year. Because the rest of the blue line is still developing. I mean, you've got a 24-year-old in Kevin Ball who has the one full NHL season under his belt. You know, Jake Bean has had the injuries, but is trying to establish himself still in this league. Miramanov, Pahal. This is very much
a lot of unknowns.
Outside of Barry and Hanley, who very much are what they are at this stage in their career, this very much is a developing group and a team, that a blue line that is still determining exactly what they are.
Yeah, this is a lot of discovery the Calgary Flames are doing in terms of what they have currently at the NHL level on the blue line. You mentioned it. Miramanov has never played a full year in the NHL. Pahal has never played a full year in the NHL. Jake Bean has, but perhaps not to the level that was expected of him when he was a first-round pick a decade ago or so. And Kevin Ball, yes, played full 82-game schedule with the New Jersey Devils, but you mentioned he's the youngest of the bunch and still developing, so you're still learning where he's at now and where he can get to. So you need those pillars of Uyghur and Anderson to steer this ship on the blue line, and they've done absolutely just that so far.
Matt and Cochran says the cease and desist is in the mail on Vibes Are Immaculate. Aaron writes, ideal scenario is Conroy trades Raz for an absolute haul, then he re-signs here as a free agent to be a part of the team coming out of a rebuild in a new building. No? I don't know. And how often does that actually happen?
I can't think of one right off the top of my head.
I remember when Doug Weight got traded and came back to St. Louis, I think it was. It's happened before, but never to this extent.
You're going deep into the bullpen if you're pulling a Doug Weight reference.
I don't think that. I think that the same thing happened when Carolina won the Cup. I think Mark Recchi may have done the same thing. May have gone back to the team he was at before.
Those are not fresh references.
No, it's absolutely not. So I don't really think that's realistic.
Perhaps it's happened more recently, and we're just drawing a blank. But that's not even necessarily a gamble I would want to take if I'm the Calgary Flames, if you have Rasmus Anderson willing to sign an extension prior to the deadline.
Hey, Razzie, we're actually going to trade you. We want a haul, but then you'll sign back here, right? Oh, absolutely. Are you kidding?
Not something I would be willing to chance if I'm the Calgary Flames.
Me neither.
Vibes are immaculate, and it doesn't get much better than this.
See? It's a good way to, wrap things up. Somebody says Nick Bjugstad. Kate. Nick Bjugstad at the stage of his career last year compared to Rasmus Anderson at the stage of his career right now, I don't think are really comparable. I think that's fair to say.
I don't know. That sounds like you're going out on a limb. If you can't tell the sarcasm on that one, I don't know how to help you.
He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. We are coming at you this hour from our Groundworks downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
This is Flames Talk. Join the conversation at 960-960. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Wednesday edition of the program continues. It's a Wednesday. You know what that means. It's time to swing you around the rest of the Pacific Division. Lots of Flames Talk on Flames Talk, but let's check out the other seven teams in the Pacific Division. It's time to check in with our Pacific Division insider, Jonathan Davis of NHL Network, and VSiN Sports joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline right now. JD, what's it like being on the show of the number one team in the Pacific Division?
It's great.
An honor, fantastic. I would assume.
Yes, thoroughly honored. I'm surprised you would still have me on the show. Figured you had bigger guests.
We remember where we came from, at least. Like we don't forget where we've come from on this program.
You're a good man, Pat.
Now,
I
think it's probably safe to say that Calgary's 917 points percentage is not sustainable, but it's been a fun start to the year, and these guys are playing their tails off. It's been a lot of fun. I know that you are en route from Las Vegas to Los Angeles as we're speaking right now, so we might as well start there, spinning around the Pacific Division as those two teams played to close out the Frozen Frenzy on Tuesday night. How about the 9 o'clock Mountain, 11 o'clock Eastern start time for Vegas and L.A. on Tuesday night? Let's start with the Vegas Golden Knights. They sit second in the Pacific Division at 4-2-1. They picked up the win to wrap up the Frozen Frenzy. What are we seeing with this Vegas Golden Knights team as they've got 9 points through seven games?
All right, first off, the game started at 8 o'clock where it was played.
Yes.
Who cares what time it was in the East Coast? Too bad for them.
You know what, for me, because I'm such a late night idiot, Eastern time would be amazing for me. Live sports at 10:30 and 11 p.m. That's my dream. Anyway, I digress.
Well, that's because you're just getting in, you know, at 11.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I'm just going out. All right, so the question at hand. You know, look, the Golden Knights came back from a road trip where they blew six leads in their final two games. And, you know, what we've seen from Vegas is that they're trying to sort out their defensive pairs. They really miss William Karlsson. Thomas Hertl has, you know, prior to last night, has struggled in the early going. There's definitely been some bumps. They get an LA team last night, Pat, that has more questions than answers. And for me, you know, the questions aren't any different than when the season started. And Vegas pounced on them early, and they never let up. The game was never close last night. Now, the other thing I will say is that Ilya Samsonov looked like the guy that, you know, when he's on, Pat, he looks like George frickin' Vezina. When he's not, you know, he looks like he's a fish out of water. But he was really good last night. That's kind of like the quick synopsis of it. You know, Vegas has played well at home. I thought they benefited, you know, early on from a beneficial schedule of getting teams on back-to-back. But last night they cleaned a lot of things up, and they took advantage of an L.A. team that, you know, played their seventh road game to start the season, albeit they did have a couple of days back at home, you know, after being out east.
Right.
They were in L.A. for a couple of days, played Anaheim in a snooze-fest game, and then, you know, had to get back on a plane and go to Vegas. And now they come back home to play San Jose tomorrow night.
L.A., 3-2-2 to start the year. I know one of the big things, it's always big for you, especially when we talk about the Kings the last few years, because, you know, L.A.'s been a competitive group, but they haven't been a group that is high-end. At no point over the last three seasons have we really felt like Los Angeles is in contention mode, but they've made the playoffs. And a thing that you've pointed to routinely has been their goal differential. They're 3-2-2, but of the teams that are kind of in the top mix in the Pacific Division, they're the only ones with a negative goal differential early on.
Well, remember, 3-2-2 means you've won three and you lost four. You know, I was a math major in college. That's how I was able to figure that one out. look, their goalies right now are, well, healthy, David Rittich and Phoenix Copley, and Darcy Kemper before that. And so, you know, that's not cup-winning goalies. And in fairness, they're missing their best defenseman in future Hall of Fame. They don't have anybody to replace them, and not many teams would. It's been a big struggle for them on their top pair. You know, Doughty and Mikey Anderson formed, you know, one of the better pairs in the NHL, but now it's Mikey Anderson, and Gavrikov has been the guy that's kind of slotted in for the last couple of games, but that's a big drop-off. And you know, their top line, which is now Kopitar, Kempe, and Quinton Byfield, who was supposed to be a center this year, and that experiment lasted all of four games. Look, they're in desperation mode. There's no question. When you go after four games, when you decide that we need to move Quinton Byfield from center back to the wing on the top line, and you don't do it just for one game, you're doing it for multiple games, you're approaching it like we have to win now. And whatever we thought, you know, whatever we want to do in the future, and Byfield will be a center in the future, we're worried about today, and we're not worried about tomorrow. And I really think they're messing this kid up, Pat. You know, moving him from center to the wing. And the other thing I don't understand is they don't have him on the number one power play. That guy should be parked right in front of the net, because he can be, he's 230 pounds, put on a lot of muscle. The guy should be on the top power play unit. Last night, you know, when they were down, when the game was out of reach, they put him at center with Kevin Fiala and Trevor Moore, and first shift they get scored on. I mean, that trio, I don't think, I don't know when the last time, if ever, they played together. It's not a good look right now in Los Angeles. And, you know, I didn't think they were going to make it. Look, I said to you before the season, they're one of the teams I thought would miss the playoffs. It's still early. They're still, you know, Edmonton still hasn't found their way. You know, it's not like they're out of it, but what I'm seeing right now early from L.A.
Yeah.
doesn't surprise me overall.
J.D., also in your neck of the woods, a very competitive Anaheim Ducks team early on. Now, also a math major. They're 3-2-1, which means they've won three and they've lost three. But I'm curious as to your impressions of a Ducks team that work ethic has not been lacking. I've seen a bunch of Ducks hockey early on just based on when they've been playing, and boy, that team comes to work right now.
They do, but they're still challenged. I mean, look, Pat, they finally snapped an 0-for-20 streak of not, you know, on the power play.
Yeah.
They went, I think they ended up going like 2-for-5 last night. Like, I was at the LA game on Sunday night. It was one of the more painful games in the press box. I mean, we were joking amongst the media members and scouts after 40 minutes. You know, it was like first goal wins. Now, we got 5 in the third period and a couple empty netters. Yeah, they play hard. You know, I watched the game against Colorado on the Friday night, and that was the Lucas Dostal show. Pat, I mean, they've got the replacement for John Gibson. There's no question about it. I mean, Anaheim got outshot 49-20 in that game. Felt bad for Dostal. He did everything he could to earn them a point. Too bad they couldn't get two. Yeah, they play hard. And, you know, what was interesting to me is that after that game, I think it was after their game against Utah, which was a thriller 6-5, and, you know, one of their bright stars, Leo Carlson, scores the overtime winner. And very, you know, there's a guy that people should pay more attention to if they're not already. But I was talking to Trevor Zegras about the fact that, you know, opening night, there he was killing penalties. Or not killing penalties. He was out in a 1-0 game.
Yeah.
In the final minute, score that empty net goal. You know, he talked about the fact that, hey, you know, a year ago I would never have been in that position. There's a maturing process going on with this team. Look, at the end of the day, they're still challenging, you know, for one of the last two spots likely in the division. They're still probably 2 years away from being a legit playoff contender, but there are pieces there, and, you know, Greg Cronin's not going to let guys take nights off for sure.
We're chatting with Jonathan Davis, NHL Network and VSiN Sports. He's our Pacific Division insider. What do you make of this Vancouver turnaround? The Canucks, they win in Chicago on that Frozen Frenzy Tuesday. I know there was a lot of consternation early on. They give up the lead against Calgary and lose in overtime. They gave up the lead against Philadelphia and lost in extra time. But seems like things have figured themselves out a little bit for the Canucks.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's kind of hard to judge. I mean, I think Vancouver in a lot of ways, look, they beat two teams recently that they should beat. I mean, they beat what? The Flyers? They beat the Flyers, and they beat the Blackhawks. I mean, the Vancouver Canucks should win those games, and they did. And so, yeah, look, they're playing better. I mean, I think they're still – look, Petey is still struggling.
Yes.
Kevin Lankinen, I think, has been their MVP to start the year. You know, he's made the absence of Demko go by a lot easier right now. We saw Demko on the ice, was it yesterday after practice or, you know, after the morning skate. So, you know, there's a good sign there. Yeah, look, they're starting, you know, they're finding their groove. They're still trying to figure things out. The big thing is, you know, Petey's got to turn things around. That's got to sort itself out if the Canucks are going to be, again, a legit cup contender. But, yeah, look, they're starting to win games that they're supposed to.
Where are you on the Oilers? I know you mentioned them a little earlier. Haven't quite found their game, which is very true. They had a 2-0 lead on Carolina. First multi-goal game of the season for McDavid. They still let it slip, and they lose in overtime. Where are you? How are we feeling about this Oilers group?
A little nervous. I mean, if you're – well, not me personally, but if you're an Oilers fan – I mean, last night was a game where, yeah, I mean, you thought, you know, for the first, 20-plus minutes, you were feeling really good. You know, as you said, Connor had a pair of goals, and it looked like, okay, hey, you know, we kind of sorted things out. And then, you know, you give up the late goal in the last, 3 minutes to get tied. Overtime was a lot of fun to watch. You know, and the Aho goal to win it was a thing of beauty. But, yeah, I mean, they're another team, again, that's still trying to figure it out. And, you know, there's enough talent there, obviously, that you think they will. But, you know, they giving up two goals to Carolina, giving up two goals is a better thing for Edmonton. But I still think until they can sort out, you know, that second and third pairing and find a way to make it better, they're going to scuffle and they're going to find themselves in more games like they did last night. Because, look, Carolina, they're not world beaters offensively. I mean, you know, they've got a better blue line to me than Edmonton. They're not as strong up front. But, you know, Rod Brind'Amour's style is that we're going to try to wear you down. And ultimately, that's what they ended up doing last night against Edmonton, and found that, you know, were able to get the game tied. And then, you know, they won in the skills competition, essentially.
Yeah.
I wouldn't think too many times that Carolina is going to outskill Edmonton, you know, win in a skills competition over Edmonton. But, you know, their top four forwards in Carolina, pretty darn good.
Yeah, no doubt. We'll wrap with the two last teams we haven't touched on. You know, JD, and I know that Macklin Celebrini's hurt and is going to be out here a little bit, which is really too bad that he's gotten hurt so early in his rookie campaign. But I was kind of wondering if San Jose, with some young talent, might be a little more competitive this season. I wasn't suggesting they were going to be close to the playoffs, but I thought that they might be able to improve on their just absolutely dreadful year last year. Well, they were 0-5-2 through their first seven games, hey?
Yeah, I mean, and you know, Pat, early on, you know, I thought they were playing hard. Well, they did play hard. They weren't finding wins. But, you know, lately it's just been more about, you know, they're just not being very competitive. It's tough because the whole, you know, the philosophy was that they moved out skill players, brought in guys that played with more of an edge. But ultimately, you know, we're seeing the end results are still the same, and that's the discouraging part. I mean, they went through a stretch. I think it was after the Winnipeg game, Pat. They took 15 penalties in two games, and you know they're just not. You know, you just can't take that type of parade to the penalty box. It doesn't give you a chance to win. You know, I watched the game against Colorado while I was at the Anaheim game, and it was kind of like a game that they were, you know, trying to hang on for dear life in many instances. I think they iced the puck like eight consecutive shifts. It was a real struggle. And, you know, I'm not surprised on most nights, but, yeah, I'm surprised, Pat, in that I would have thought by now they would have found a way to, you know, to get themselves a win. But it just hasn't worked out at all. And it's got to be, you know, extremely frustrating for the group because, look, the plan was to suck last year. They did a really good job at that. Plan was not to do that again this year. It was to take at least a baby step forward. And, well, right now, I mean, we're just not seeing it. And it's like, okay, when does victory number one come about? You know, tomorrow night they play the Kings. I mean, you know, the Kings are like -330 on the money line. I'll tell you, from a betting standpoint, I'll put a few dollars on San Jose, just because the Kings shouldn't be a -330 favorite over anybody. And I've seen the Kings play some real stinkers against San Jose. Like, it wouldn't shock me if they get their first win tonight.
Okay,
and that's all LA would need. By the way, we've got it's a crazy time out here in LA. I mean, New York was pretty insane about a week ago with the Jets, Giants, Yankees, Mets all playing together. You know, we've got a Friday night coming up in L.A. where everyone but the Kings is, you know, are pretty much playing, and concerts going on. World Series, USC football. It's a crazy time out here in Southern California. Oh, and oh, by the way, the Kings have a Saturday afternoon game against Utah. Saturday night, we got the World, you know, game two of the World Series. And I feel bad for the Kings because They've got a big event going on with their fans after their game on Saturday. And what do the Dodgers do? They make it to the World Series. And yeah, I'm sure the Kings players would much rather be watching the World Series than, you know, having to do this fan event. No offense to the fans, but you know, there you go.
You got the Dodgers.
This is my
little
monologue.
Yeah, I like that. Well, I think that's a good way to wrap things up, my friend. Seattle is what Seattle is. We can leave them for next time. Get home safe to SoCal, my friend. We'll chat again next Wednesday. Appreciate the spin around the division, as always. Thank you, JD.
Thanks, Pat. And I got to be a part of my first high-speed chase on my way home here.
Oh, good. Was it a Bronco?
Yeah. No, it was not a Bronco. But, yeah, the car flew. The car being chased flew by me. The rear bumper's hanging off and honking away. And they're like, oh, God. Next thing I see is this cop car flying by me. And they eventually caught him. And, you know, the traffic was backed up for a bit.
Never happens on a SoCal freeway. That never happens. We'll talk to you next week, pal. Appreciate it as always, JD. Thanks, man.
Take care.
Jonathan Davis of NHL Network and VSiN Sports joining us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Enjoy hockey and football game day specials at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast. Pickup and delivery available at Atlas Pizza, 403-248-3344. As we start to wrap things up, whenever I think high speed chase, I always think of a
It's Ford a classic.
Bronco. That's the only, really, the only high speed chase I've ever seen was it 1994? Was the Ford? I remember watching that vividly. The OJ chase in 1994. The first time I remember watching it with my mother, and she's like, "You know, maybe we should change the channel. We don't know what's going to happen here." That was a good parenting move, and all. And nothing ended up happening, but in hindsight, you know, that was a good parenting move. Just in case you have no idea what's going to happen in a high-speed chase like that with a potential. We got to get to break. We got to wrap things up this hour. He's Aaron Vickers on Twitter at AA Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. Cam Shan, our producers this hour. And this hour has been the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Treat yourself with up to $500 in savings of fire-resistant gun safes. Explore the full line of safes at CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.